Welcome. My name's Chris Scott, and I'm a WSCT Certified Educator for 3050. 3050 is an approved WSCT Level 3 program provider. This podcast is designed to help all students of the WSCT Level 3 pass their tasting exam. You can listen to the podcast even if you're not doing the course, and you'll get lots of good information. If you're studying for the WSCT Level 3 course, please listen to the podcast and make as many notes as you'd like. That will certainly help you in the exam. But this audio track is designed as a companion podcast to the 3050's guide to the WSCT Level 3 tasting exam. Our guide can be purchased and downloaded from our website at 3050.co.uk. The easiest way to find it is go to 3050.co.uk, that's THIRTYFIFTY, 3050, all one word spout out, .co.uk. Along the top you'll see a link called WSCT Courses. It's in grey along the top. If you click on that, then you'll go to our WSCT area of our website. On the left-hand menu is a menu that says Tasting Support. If you click on the Tasting Support page, you'll then be able to access our guide plus a number of other Tasting Support products. These include getting your tasting note analysed, and for people in the UK and Europe, we will also supply blind wines that they can do mock exams at home. You'll send us the results and then we can mark them and give you feedback again on your mark. Also, any feedback in terms of improving your mark. The guide itself is 4 pages long and is divided up into 2 different parts. The first 2 pages are what we're looking at today, and it's titled 3050's Decoding the WSCT SAT, or Systematic Approach to Tasting. Quite a catchy little title there. That's what we're focusing on today. There's a further 2 pages, which we're not covering, that looks at things like common exam errors, how to avoid up to 25% of common easily fixed errors, information about the styles of wine that you're going to come across in the exam and how to approach it, top tips, a guide on how to approach the tasting exam, information on faults, not that you should get a faulty wine in the exam, but it is tasting, so we thought we'd include it in this, as well as a development guide so you can understand where wines are in their development and what to look for. We finish off with a whole page dedicated to different grape varieties that are likely to be in the exam and their common aromas and aged characters, as well as the climatic influences that affect the grape variety flavors, as well as the aromas and flavors that you likely get from the winemaker or secondary aromas. But as I said, this audio is just focusing on the first 2 pages about what to look for when you're tasting and how to write a tasting note. The best way to use the audio guide is with a glass or two of wine in front of you. In fact, we suggest you have the 3050 guide from our website. 2 wines, a white wine and a red wine, pen and paper. The idea is that as you work through the guide, it's a good idea to write a tasting note as you go. As you go through the podcast, you may find that you can't keep up if you're trying to write a tasting note. I don't leave gaps for that. So do just use the pause button and the play button just to pause it where you want time to assess the wine after each section. I should state that while the Level 3 textbook gives lots of information about how to taste wine, WSCT itself leaves it up to the lecturer to define how the levels are measured. For example, how to measure high acidity. This is fine, but it does create small inconsistencies from one lecturer to another. As a result, this guide should be a reference, and where the guide disagrees with the person who's going to be marking your exam, then you should always align yourself with the person marking your exam. If you do have the 3050 tasting guide, I suggest you go to the bottom of page 3 where we have our mnemonic and read that and lay up your tasting note in a similar way as recommended by the mnemonic. At Level 3, we're tasting and we're looking for 3 general areas, eyes, nose, and mouth. And once you've tasted those 3 components, you then form conclusions. You can treat them as quite separate, eyes, nose, and mouth. However, there is overlap between each one. For example, if you're looking at a red wine and you see obvious browning in the rim color, then that might imply that the wine is older and you should be looking for tertiary aromas or aged characters in the tasting note. So they are independent, but there's a consistency that you can apply at the end of the tasting to confirm that you haven't made any silly mistakes. Okay, so let's look at eyes. We're going to start with the white wines. With the eyes, you've got to look at the intensity and the color. and intensity is worth one mark, the colour's worth one mark. And whilst you don't get any marks or any observations, we normally get people to look for things like legs. This can help you later on when you're doing your alcohol. So let's start with the white wine. To assess the intensity of a white wine, put 50ml sample in your ISO wine testing glass and hold the glass on a 45 degree angle. If the pigment is just in the center of the glass and no more, so when you're looking at it, and sometimes you can almost feel like you're going cross-eyed looking at the pigmentation in the glass, but when you look at it, if you see anything that isn't absolutely clear water, and you can sometimes see just little bits of specks of pigment in the center, then you would call that pale. If there's strong pigmentation in the center, and it goes from the center to two-thirds near the rim, then you're looking at a wine that's about a medium intensity. And if the pigmentation almost reaches the rim, then you'd call it a deep wine. Now, just be careful on that. White wines, the pigmentation never reaches the rim, but it might get to 1 or 2 millimeters from the rim, in which case you would definitely call that deep. For red wines, the way we measure it is slightly different. You hold your glass on a 45 degree angle. You look down through that oval shape at the deepest part of the glass and put some text below it. You know, it can be the exam sheet. It doesn't really matter what it is. If you can read the text through the deepest part of the glass, you know, you might have to move the piece of paper closer or further away, or the glass closer or further away to your eye. Try and look at it. But if you can see through the wine and read the text through it, then we say the wine is pale. If you can see the text, but you can't read it, it's a little bit obscured, and you just can't read the text at all, you'd call it medium. And if the text is completely opaque, you cannot see the text at all, you would call it deep. Now, there are color guides for rosé, but the exam is going to be a white wine and a red wine, so we're not going to cover rosé in this particular podcast. Now, the color of the wine, a little bit different when you assess it. For white wines, because the coloration is a lot lighter, you measure the color of a white wine at the center of the glass. So you hold your glass on a 45 degree angle and you look down into the middle of that sort of oval shape of wine, right in the center. You look down through that oval shape at the deepest part of the glass, and the color at that point gives you an idea of the color. You've got a number of options. Basically, start with the assumption that the wine is lemon. All right, lemon, you know what lemons look like, hopefully. And if it looks like that, great, you're lemon. If you see any green tinges to it, then you would call it lemon green. Now, lemon green is a sign of a youthful or cool climate wine, so that can give you a clue about what to expect. If you see any brown in it, so the wine's yellow with a little bit of brown, that equals gold. So if it's more yellow than brown, you'd call it gold. And that's a sign of either aging, so expect some of the aging aromas, we call these tertiary aromas, or if the wine's golden colour, it may be because they've picked up some colour from an oak barrel. For white wines, you can just see a little bit of browniness, which turns the wine golden, and that's a sign of oakiness. We call these sort of secondary flavours or winemaker flavours. If the wine is more brown than yellow, then you'd call it amber. And that is definitely showing a lot of age, usually. The wine could be fully developed at that stage. And if it's completely brown, there's no yellow in it at all, and that shows an extreme of age or severe oxidation, and the wine is fully developed, possibly even tired. So the colour can give you a hint at the development of the wine. For red wines, we do it slightly differently. If you hold the glass on a 45 degree angle and look down through that, you will see that in a dark wine, it's black. You cannot tell the color. So for red wines, we assess the wine at the rim. So hold your glass on a 45 degree angle, looking straight down, follow it to the rim, and right at the rim, you'll see the different colors a lot easier. So we assess the color of a red wine at the rim. The colour options, again, is we start with the assumption the wine's ruby, and that's no brown or blue. If you've got a hint of blue in there, and sometimes it can be really quite bluey, and that gives the wine a real purpley colour. So if the wine's looking quite purpley with a bit of blue in there, then you call the wine purple. And if you see a wine that's purple, that's a definite sign that that wine is probably going to be youthful. So you're not expecting any of the aged flavours, or as we say, tertiary flavours in the wine. So if you're looking at the wine and it's got no bluey or purpley colour at the rim, if it's got any sort of noticeable browniness, and I'm talking about more red than brown, then you call it garnet. If it's more red than brown, you call it garnet. If there's no brown at all, you call it ruby. So start at ruby. Got any blue, then you call it purple. If you're starting at ruby, if you've got any brown, you call it garnet. Now, if it's more red than brown, it's garnet. If it's more brown than red, there's still a tinge of red there, then you call it tawny, and that's normally showing a developed wine. And finally, if it's all brown and there's no red in the color at all, you'd finally call that brown, and that's normally a very big indicator that the wine is fully developed. If you're still a little bit confused, the tasting guide has a range of images on that first page on the bottom right hand side that gives a range of colors, normally for a sort of a mid intensity wine, but it gives you a purple, a ruby, a garnet, tawny, lemon green, lemon, gold, and amber. So it gives you a chance to really sort of see where things fit on that spectrum. The other thing you want to do is just have a look at any observations. Now, you don't get any marks for observations. You only get one mark for intensity, one mark for color. But observations can give you clues about the wine that you can then use. So the classic couple of observations are pétillance. So if you see any bubbles, just very light bubbles, not like a sparkling wine, but very light bubbles in there in the glass, it's a sign of either a problem, i.e. the wine's undergone a secondary fermentation on bottle, which is can be a problem, or it's a sign that they've bottled the wine with a little bit of freshness in this. For example, Muscadet sur Lys is a wine that you see from the Loire Valley. It often has a little bit of bubbles there because they've bottled the wine with a little bit of dissolved carbon dioxide in the wine. It just helps lift the wine, gives it a little bit of oomph to it. Probably the key one is legs. If you pick up the glass, give it a bit of a swirl and put it down and just watch what happens. And for wines that have got about 12.5% alcohol or more, what you'll see is as the wine slowly sinks down the slide, it will sort of condense into drips and then run down the inside of the glass. We call these legs or cathedral arches, whatever you want to call them. But the more legs you've got on a dry wine, the more likely you are to have higher alcohols. You can get legs on wines that are lower than 12.5%, but that's normally associated with sweeter styles of wines. So if you've got a dry red wine, definitely, or a dry white wine, and you see legs, then you can normally guess that the alcohol is going to be about 12.5% or higher. And if there's loads and loads and loads of legs, then the alcohol could be quite high. So this is a clue for later on when we're assessing the alcohol level. One last thing to keep an eye out for is you might see some deposits in the bottom of the glass. It could be red, brown, or black, and these tend to be tannins. These are things that have come out of the wine. The other one is if you see any sort of white, clear, or maybe a slightly pinky color if it's a red wine, these are tartrate deposits. You're unlikely to see either of these in sort of high volume, cheaper styles of wines. They can be a sign of a good, better quality wine sometimes, or they can be a sign of a problem. That's your eyes. Remember, you get marks for intensity and color, but it's a really good idea to make some observations because they can help you later on. The next step is we're going to look at the nose, and this is worth 7 marks in the exam. One of the problems you get with the nose is that you often get people who will taste the wine the same way and expect different results. I think Einstein said, you know, if you keep doing the same thing and expect different results, that's a sign of insanity. And the number of times you see people sitting in an exam, swirling the glass, smelling it, and they're really struggling to get aromas, well, that's a sign of insanity. So for me, I like to do a process where you smell the wine differently. And as you smell the wine differently, you will possibly get different aromas. And that really helps you sort of get those key aromas that you need for the exam. Now, I did say earlier to swirl a little wine to get legs, and that's great. If you have swirled the wine to look at the legs, leave the glass alone. If you're in the exam, go to the other wine, do the same process for the other wine. So if you've done it for the white wine, now go through the process and do it for the red wine. The reason is we want to smell the wine and get an idea of the intensity of the smell without swirling the glass. You know, if you swirl the glass, you're going to build up aromas and you're going to get a more intensive flavor. So it's really important that we always smell the wine to get the intensity from a similar starting point. And the way to do that is leave the glass for a good couple of minutes to let any aromas that you've built up in the glass dissipate. And then we're going to go through and do a 5-step process to smell the wine. The first time we smell it, I call it the first hit. You don't swirl the glass. All you're looking for is an intensity and condition of the wine. What you're going to do is you're going to put your glass on your chin and smell in. You're going to move the wine from your chin to your bottom lip to putting your nose in there. As the wine gets progressively closer and closer and closer, you're more likely to be able to smell more and more intensity of the wine. But we're going to use that process to sort of work out the intensity of the wine. So first up, put the wine on your chin. Take a steady, slow draw. If you can smell it clearly and you can describe some of the aromas, it might smell like gooseberries or raspberries or whatever it is. If you can actually unpick some of the smells and when it's sitting on your chin, then you would say that wine is pronounced. If you can smell the wine just, but you're not quite sure what the smells are and you can't really describe them, then I would call that wine medium plus. Moving the wine to your lip, remember, don't swirl this. If it wasn't pronounced on medium plus, the next step is move the wine to your bottom lip. Here, if you can smell it clearly and describe the smells, then we would call it medium intensity. If you can smell it, but you can't describe it, you'd probably call it medium minus. Finally, stick the nose in the glass. And if you can barely smell the wine at all, then you'd call it light. Hopefully, if you stick your wine in your glass and you can smell it, you should be able to describe some of the aromas, and that would confirm that it's a medium minus smell. And that's what we call the first hit. You're not swirling the wine or anything like that. All you're doing is just trying to get an intensity. After that, you should be able to write down the intensity of the wine. You may also be able to start writing some general descriptions of the wine. You might say, oh, it's got a little bit of citrusy to it, or it's got a bit of lemon, or apples, or red fruits, or whatever. It doesn't really matter, but if you can make a general note about some of the smells at that point, brilliant. The next step is we're really going to focus on trying to get the smells now, because you get 1 mark for intensity and 5 marks for coming up with aromas that you can smell. So you've smelt the wine. The next step is we're going to swirl and sniff. So give the glass a bit of a swirl, stick your nose in there, and take a nice, long, steady draw. Write down any aromas you get. Now, if you're struggling with aromas, the best way to think about it is by clusters. WCD have this concept of clusters. They are things like red fruits or black fruits, floral, citrus, stone fruits, tropical fruits. Quite often students can smell something and they don't really know what it is. What you want to do is ask yourself the question, is this a citrus smell? Yes or no? If it is a citrus smell, what sort of citrus smell is it? Is it a lemon smell or a lime smell? And if you ask those questions, sometimes if you go, is it a lemon smell? You're more likely to go, yes it is, or no it's not, rather than just smelling it and trying to guess it. The other thing is, if you're not sure, it's better to get it down than not to. So if it's got some sort of general citrusy smell and you're not sure if it's lemon or lime, write down lemon, write down lime. Don't get bogged down with whether it's exactly lemon or exactly lime. One of the problems with the course is that the examiner used mark the descriptors on the SAT guide. They're the common ones that the examiner is looking for themselves. Sometimes you get a flavor that doesn't quite fit lemon, it doesn't quite fit lime, but it's somewhere in between. The examiner is likely to circle both, so you should circle both. Don't get bogged down spending lots of time trying to work out the exact smell. If in doubt, get it down. That's the golden rule about this. With flavors, there's 3 general types of flavors. Primary flavors, secondary flavors, and tertiary flavors. Now, primary flavors are typically fruit or floral flavors that you get when you first bottle the wine. They're supposed to come from the grapes, not the winemaking process, which we would call secondary aromas. Secondary flavors are flavors that are normally associated directly with the winemaking. So, for example, putting a wine into an oak barrel will impart a vanilla or maybe coconut flavor. Depending on how they've charred the inside of the barrels, you might get a smoky, toasty flavor coming from the wine. When wines are in contact with the dead yeast or lees, it quite often picks up yeasty, bready flavors or some sort of leesy character in the wine. So that's another way of doing it. Another one is perhaps malolactic fermentation. These are sort of buttery flavors that can be imparted into the wine. The final type is tertiary flavors, and these are the flavors the wine gets after it's been aged. So as wines age, they tend to lose a little bit of fruitiness or the primary fruits, and they may take on these more tertiary flavors. So these can often be quite savory characters, mushroom, leather, nutty, dried fruits. Those sort of flavors are tertiary. So now we've done our first hit, we've sort of smelt it, we've got an idea of the intensity. We've given the glass a bit of a swirl, and we've got an idea of maybe some more aromas as well coming through, which is all great. You want to start thinking about what the information your eyes gave you. If you've got a white wine that's showing some golden color or amber color, then you're looking for maybe some secondary or tertiary wine flavors. So make sure you're asking those questions. Is this wine got some oak influence in it? Has this wine got any age character in it? Make sure you use those clues from your eyes to give you an idea of the wine. Remember, if the color of the wine's got any brown in it, like a gold or a garnet color, then that's showing that the wine's either got some age, or for a white wine, it may have some secondary winemaker's influence like oak aging. So if you've got any sort of gold or garnet colored wines, or even dark or even browner wines, you really want to be thinking about tertiaries and secondary aromas in that wine and really go hunting for them. So we've spelt the wine twice, first hit, and then we've given it a bit of a swirl and had a bit of a sniffy sniff. The next step is what I call layering up. Now, to be honest, I don't really understand the science of this, but I'll tell you what I do and what I sort of think in my own mind what's going on, because you do get different smells. What I do is I swirl the glass, give it a really good swirl, put your hand over the top, and wait about 10 seconds. In my mind, I'm thinking the different aromas that are boiling out of the wine, when they're being left to stand there, they're sort of layering up. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but wait 10, 15 seconds, gently remove your hand, and take an incredibly gentle sniff. In my mind, I'm thinking I'm just hoovering up those super light aromas at the top of the glass. Really super light, almost as light a smell as you can, with your nose really close to the glass. What you'll find is you often get strawberry or raspberry or those lighter smells that you miss if you just take a nice deep draw of the wine. Remember, the intensity you hoover up the smells will control a lot of what you're smelling. So take a really, really super gentle smell of the wine and you should get slightly different aromas. Now, the other two places that you will get aromas you don't normally think of as your nose, but they are the mouth and on the finish. Now, if you put the wine in your mouth, you're tasting in your mouth. Well, you're not actually. Any flavor you get in your mouth is actually coming from exactly the same place as your flavors from your nose. It's your olfactory lobe, just above your nose. And what happens is when you put wine in your mouth, the vapors go down your throat, up through the back, get to the olfactory lobe, and give you different flavors. Now, because the wine's warmed up when it's in your mouth, you often get different aromas. You know, it's like heating the wine up. So you'll get different aromas to if the wine is colder. You can use those descriptors on your nose. There's still aromas. In fact, later on in the guide, we talk about how the examiner marks the wines and how if you get the smell on your nose and on your mouth, you should actually make sure that they are in both of those boxes, you know, for aroma and also for flavor. But tasting the wine will give you more aromas. And finally, in your mouth as well, after you've spat the wine out and you're looking at the finish, how long the flavor persists in your mouth, what you'll find is some wines, things start to fade at different paces and things that were being hidden by other things start to come out. So on the finish of the wine, you will again get different flavors in your mouth. Now, according to WCT, that's great. They're your mouth flavors. They shouldn't go onto your nose aroma. However, I would be highly looking for them on your nose, and if it was me in the exam, I would write down anything that's in the mouth that wasn't on my nose. I'd write it down on the nose as well. So I would use the mouth and the finish as opportunities to get additional flavors for your nose. Remember, you are looking for 5 marks, so you really need to make sure that you've got at least 5 to get any chance of getting 4 marks. In fact, you're looking for about 7 or 8 in reality, because you won't always agree with what the examiner said. The other thing to do is make sure that if you do see any brown on the wine, whether it be a garnet color or gold or amber or brown, whatever it is, make sure you're really looking hard for secondaries and tertiary aromas. If you've got brown, you're probably going to get either secondaries or more likely tertiary aromas, in which case really, really go hunting for those. And if in doubt, if you think it might have a generic savory character, get it down, okay? Because the next thing you need to talk about on the nose is the development of the wine. Is it a youthful wine? That is it all primary and secondary? There's no tertiary aromas in the wine. If you do have any tertiary aromas, and remember that brown color on the rim gives you a hint that the wine is possibly developing. If you have more primary and secondary aromas and a little bit of tertiary, then you call the wine developing. If the wine's more tertiary, so more savoury characters, mushroom, barnyard, all that sort of stuff, than primary aromas, then you would say the wine is fully developed. And finally, if it's just got tertiary aromas, it's all sort of savoury, nutty, dried fruits, and there's no sort of fresh, fruity aromas then you'd say past its best or tired. When you've been smelling the wine for ages, what tends to happen is your nose loses sensitivity. Now, that's a problem because you start losing any subtlety in the wine and you only see the big stuff. So what we're looking for is a way of resetting our nose. There's two ways of doing it. The key thing is to smell something different. Usually if you smell the back of your hand or back of your arm, smelling your own smell seems to reset your nose. Another option is, if you're in the exam, is to change from one wine to the next. If you've been doing the white wine, change to the red wine, write down some flavours of that. Your nose will get reset to the red wine and lose its sensitivity. And then you come back to the white wine looking for new aromas. And that's your nose. Pretty straightforward. There are 7 marks there, and the bulk of the marks are 5 marks for the aroma. So it's really important that you taste the wine differently and you look for every possible aroma. And remember the golden rule, if in doubt, get it down. Now, one of the things that the examiner is asked to provide is they're asked to provide one of 4 different types of wines. They could be asked to provide a simple wine. And if they are providing a simple wine, they're looking for the word simple. One of the 5 marks in the exam, if the wine is defined as simple by the examiner, you must write the word simple down. You get 1 mark for simple and then 4 other marks for the aroma. Those 4 other marks could be for primary fruits or they could be secondary. So, for example, some cheap wines might make a very simple fruit-forward style of wine, but then they'll put some oak chips into the tank and give the wine maybe a little bit of vanillary. Now, the wine's not necessarily a particularly fancy wine. It's a very simple wine, but it has some oaky flavour from chips, for example, in which case the wine can still be quite simple. But usually with simple wines, you're looking for primary fruits, maybe some secondary aromas. But typically, the flavors come from one or two clusters. So it might be a very floral aroma and maybe some citrus aroma, or it could be really just simple red fruits with a little bit of oak in it. Perhaps there, the red fruits is one cluster, the oak is another cluster. Just remember, you get no marks for doing cluster heading. So if you say the wine's got red fruits in it, that is not a mark. You need to say strawberry or raspberry or red cherry or one of those flavors. Similarly, if you say citrus, no marks for citrus, you must define lemon and lime, etc. So we've talked about simple. You must use the word simple. Now, if you're struggling for aromas, you're really struggling to get some flavors out of this wine, simple is a really good catch-all. I would just use it if you're struggling to get flavors out of the wine, put the word simple down. You're probably going to be right. And if you're not right and it's not simple, it's cost you no marks. All right. So, you know, if in doubt, get it down. That's the old saying. So with simple wines, in terms of marking, you get 1 mark for your first primary fruit aroma and then 1 mark for the term simple. And then you'll get 3 marks for any of the next primary or secondary aromas. It doesn't really matter whether it's primary or secondary. Now, the next type of wine the examiner might supply is primary only. In which case you get 1 mark for your first primary aroma and 4 marks for your next primary. So this wine is all fruit. If it's all fruit, then the wine must be youthful. Similarly, simple absolutely must be youthful because it's all primary or secondary. There's no tertiary aromas there as well. Next style of wine, primary and secondary. Normally there's no tertiary in this, so you get 1 mark for your first primary descriptor that's correct, 1 mark for your first secondary descriptor that's correct, and then 3 marks for any other primary or secondary descriptor. So that's how that marking works. And the final type of wine the examiner may be asked to supply in the exam is a primary, secondary, and tertiary, in which case, when the examiner's marking it, he'll give you 1 mark for your first primary, 1 mark for your first secondary, and 1 mark for your first tertiary, and then 2 marks for any other primary, secondary, tertiary. So the idea behind this is if the examiner is providing a primary, secondary, tertiary, and you're only giving all primary, then you haven't really clocked that this wine is a developing or fully developed wine, in which case the examiner doesn't want to give you full marks. So you would, if you just had a primary, secondary, tertiary wine and you just put primary fruits down, the maximum marks you could get in the exam is 3 marks for the aroma. Okay, that finishes nose. The next one is where a lot of the marks are, and that is on the palate. Now, for white wines, you get 9 marks, and for red wines, it's out of 10 marks. So a little bit more for red wine. The reason for that is in white wines, you don't get marks for tannins, whereas in red wines, you get an extra mark for tannin. So the first thing we're going to do is sweetness. Now, before I say anything about sweetness, just remember this, and it's quite important. Most people just drink dry wines. So when they get something that's got a little bit of sweetness, they're like, oh my God, that's so sweet. Remember, you're comparing 6 different sweetness levels. At one end, you've got dry wines, and at the other end, you've got luscious wines, which are insanely sweet. But a lot of people will taste a wine that's got a little bit of sugar in it and go, oh, that's really sweet. Maybe something like a white Zinfandel, you know, one of those rosé sort of sweet wines from California. If you only ever drink dry wines, that is going to seem very sweet to you. And you'll go, oh, that's sweet. It's not a sweet wine, all right? It's likely to be medium sweet. It may even be, on occasion, medium dry. So you need to make sure with sweetness that you've tasted wines with lots of sweetness in them, so you've got that range. It's a number of students that come up to me and go, oh, this is a very sweet wine, just because they just don't drink sweet wines. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at how sweet it is compared to the full range of wines that you're going to come across. So to get the sweetness of the wine, you taste the wine in your mouth, swirl it around, spit it out. If you don't really detect any sugar at all, then you'd call it dry. Normally it's a dry wine. It's things like Chablis, Muscat, a lot of New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, etc. Not a problem. If you can detect some sweetness, but only just, then you'd call it off dry. Noticeable sweetness, but not particularly sweet. If you're getting a wine that's obviously sweet, it's clearly got some sweetness here. In fact, a sweetness is a key part of the wine, then you'd call it medium dry. Typical examples of that are things like German Riesling Cabernets that have got particularly low alcohol levels. You can get dry German Riesling Cabernets, but if it's got 10% alcohol in it, then a lot of that sugar hasn't been converted to alcohol. You've got a wine that's got a lot of residual sugar in it, so a lot of sweetness coming through. If the wine's got quite a decent slab of sugar in it, and we're talking about those white Zinfandels, some of the Alsace Rieslings, German Auslese wines, and then you're going to call it medium sweet. You will find that the wine normally has, irrespective of the alcohol level at this level, legs. You'll often find the wines have a lot of legs in it. And the next one is sweet. This is what you'd call a proper dessert wine. If you're going to have this with a sweet dessert, remember that a sweet wine needs to be sweeter than a dessert. So a proper sweet wine is absolutely quite decent sweetness. Wines like Sauternes, Tokaj, a lot of the ports, you'd call sweet. Now, for most people, dry, off-dry, medium-dry, medium-sweet, and sweet are really the common wines you're going to come across. Occasionally, you'll come across a wine that we class as luscious. Now, luscious is insanely sweet. All right, they're syrupy, they're thick, they're almost like treacle sometimes. These are things like Rutherglen Muscat, PX Sherries, Trockenbaren Auslaser. You're going to have legs on the glass. It's just insanely sweet. Your examiner may give you a luscious wine. That's great. You don't actually need to taste a luscious wine in class these days. So hopefully the sweetest you'll come across in the exam is sweet. If you've tasted a sweet wine and you've got a wine that is so sweet compared to that, then you're going to have to call that luscious. All right, the next one is acidity. Again, 1 mark for acidity. Now, the options are low acidity, medium minus, medium, medium plus, and high acidity. As you'll learn later in the course, it's very easy for a winemaker to adjust the acidity in a wine. All they need to do is add some tartaric acid into the wine, and it's done. And that will raise the acidity. So the chances of coming across a wine with low acidity is pretty, pretty rare. So I wouldn't normally expect in the exam a low acidity wine, because it's so easy to adjust and fix a low acidity wine. However, it might come in. Now, the way I get people to measure it, and this is, acidity is one of those ones where you do get variation from person to person to person. So what I'm going to give you is what works for most people. I'd say it works probably for around 70% of the students I have. However, about 30% of them need to tweak the number I'm going to give them up or down so that they are in line. Okay, so what we're going to do is, to measure acidity, you take a slug of the wine, swish it around your mouth, spit it out. Take another slug of the wine, swish it around, spit it out. I normally take a very brief swallow just to make sure my mouth is very dry at this point. Open your mouth up, lean forward, and count to 12 seconds. See what happens. If you start to salivate and drip, literally drip out of your mouth, make sure you get your hand underneath that, you're absolutely dripping after 12 seconds, that wine is high acidity. Let's not muck about, this wine is a high acid wine. You're absolutely lovely stuff. It's high acid wine. After 12 seconds, if your mouth has got loads of salivation in there, a decent bit of salivation, but you haven't dripped, then you call it medium plus acidity. If you've got a slight salivation in your mouth, not lots of saliva, but a little bit of saliva in there, but the wine feels pretty balanced, you'd call it medium acidity. And if there's no salivation at all, you know, the wine feels quite full, almost flabby perhaps, such as an Alsace-Gewürz or something like that, an Alsace-Gewürz Traminer, then you call it medium minus. As I say, you would only ever call it low if the wine feels really out of whack. It just feels completely wrong, in which case you'd call it low acidity. As I say, very rarely to see any wines with low acidity because it's so easy to adjust the wines and give it a little bit of a kick. So now, as I said, the key thing here is that different people will start salivating at different times. Most people are around 12 seconds. However, you could be particularly sensitive or particularly insensitive, in which case you need to just start thinking about maybe changing that number. You know, if you start salivating really early for all wines, then you want to tweak it down to maybe 5 or 6 or 7 seconds. You'll need to tweak it based on your lecturer, what they've got. That will give you a good idea. Some people take forever to start salivating. They may need to go up to 20 seconds before they start to regularly salivate on high acid wines. Again, tweak the number. 12 seconds is a good starting point, but you'll need to find a point that works for you, that lines you up with your lecturer. So acidity is one of those ones you've got to be a bit careful about. The other thing you need to be careful about is, particularly for red wines, is that red wines often have a real drying sensation in your mouth. And whilst your mouth will still fill up with saliva, you may lose it if you're sort of rubbing your tongue around your mouth the whole time while you're thinking about how much saliva you got in your mouth. So just be super careful. If the wine's very tannic, be really, really careful when you're assessing the acidity. You will still dribble like normal, but quite often that dryness means that if it's medium plus, you may not think it's quite as acidic. You'll still have a mouthful of saliva, but because the rest of your mouth feels drying, you'll sometimes misinterpret that and just say, oh, it's not medium plus, it's medium, or it's not medium, it's medium minus. So you, if the wine's really, really tannic, you need to just be a little bit careful about this. The next one is tannins, and as I said earlier, for white wines, you don't get any marks of tannins. However, it's always quite good just to have a quick look at it. And the reason for that is that for white wines in particular, tannins can come from maybe just a little bit of skin contact, or sometimes white wines pick up a light bit of tannins from oak barrels. So if you're seeing the wine's golden and it's got a little bit of tannins to it, it may not be oaked, but it could be. It's a sign that it is, and you just need to be super careful to decide whether you think there is any oak influence in the wine or not. So amber color could be a sign of age. It could also be a sign of oak. A very light bit of tannins in your white wine could be a sign of skin contact, or again, it could be a sign of oak. So just think about those two things. For tannins, you've got 5 levels, low, medium minus, medium, medium plus, and high. The way I normally get people to assess it is put the wine in your mouth, give it a good old swirl around, spit it out, take your tongue and rub it over the roof of your mouth. If you're getting really noticeable grip, you know, it feels super dry on between your tongue and the roof of your mouth. If you rub your tongue over your gums and you feel like they're almost shrinking, you know, everything sort of like that, then that is likely to be high tannins. It normally comes from, as I said, the oak and skin contact. Sort of wines that are high in tannins are things like good quality young left bank Bordeaux, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon dominated top end wines from Bordeaux, Barolo, some of the more traditional styles of Cahors coming out. These are wines you don't often see in the supermarket. They've got a lot of structure. Make sure you've tried some of these wines to get your reference for high tannins. Again, a lot of people who just drink a lot of cheaper commercial wines. These wines are actually quite low in tannins, because tannins are one of those things some people love, some people hate. But if you're trying to make a mass market wine for everybody, you want everybody to enjoy it, so you tend to have lower tannins. So if your mouth isn't super drying out and really, really tannic, and just remember, if you just drink a lot of commercial wines, most wines that are sort of medium plus tannins or more will feel that way to you. So it takes a little bit of practice to get used to it. So you do need to do some range finding. A medium plus tannin wines are things like a good quality but young Centimillion, a Crianza Rioja. These are examples of normally wines that are medium plus tannins. Now, medium tannins still have a firm grip. There is definitely some tannin there, but it's not as extreme as a high tannic wine. Medium tannins isn't soft and round. Medium tannins has got some grips. Again, you're talking about good quality Burgundy, red Burgundy, will typically have about a medium tannins. All right, so there's definitely some grip there, but it's not really drying your gums out or anything like that. Medium minus is a little bit of grippiness, but not a lot. So sort of the cheaper end of red Burgundy, sort of the cheaper end of Merlots, that sort of stuff, where there is still some, just a little bit of grippiness between your tongue and the roof of your mouth, but not a particular lot. And then the final one is low tannins. And this is where really you don't really have any grip at all. So things like Beaujolais Nouveau, a lot of rosé wines are sort of classed as low tannin. Some rosé wines are classed as sort of medium minus as well, but you know, they're in that sort of, yes, there's almost no tannins to this wine, and that's where you call low. Next one is alcohol. Again, one mark for alcohol. There's two different scales, one's for fortified wines and one's for still wines. Now, because the exam is entirely focused on still wines, there's no fortified wines in the exam. We're not going to cover fortified wines in this. Alcohol is one of those ones where one common mistake really occurs a lot. And that is, alcohol is low, medium, or high. There's no medium minus or medium plus. If you write medium plus alcohol in the exam, no mark. That is not a mark. That's not an acceptable term for the WCT Level 3, so no mark. Number of times I tell students this, and I have a little speech I give before the tasting exam starts, reminding people of this, and you still see people writing down medium plus alcohol. So in your mind, alcohol, low, medium, or high. Nice and easy. Generally, if the wine's got 14% alcohol or more, then we'd call it high alcohol. In theory, you're really going by how it tastes. Some wines will feel more alcoholic, because what happens is the fruit tends to hide the alcohol, and alcohol hides the fruit a little bit as well. So if you got a really fruity wine with super high in alcohol, you may not notice the alcohol as much. You've got to be super duper careful about that. But as a general rule of thumb, around 14% alcohol or higher, you'd class it as high alcohol. What you find is alcohol gives a lot of body to a wine. So often high alcohol tend to be more full bodied. Sometimes for some people, they'll get a sort of a warm, almost burning feeling down the back of their throat at around 14% or higher. You're certainly going to see lots and lots and lots of legs. Normally low alcohol wines are less than about 11%. For low alcohol wines, if there's no sugar in it, they tend to be very light. And if they're dry, they'll also have no legs as well. You will find a lot of sort of slightly sweetish or medium dry German Riesling Cabernets. The vast majority of wines are what we call medium alcohol. And if in doubt, you start with the assumption the wine is medium alcohol. It's typically 11% all the way up to 13.9%. These wines may or may not have legs. You will normally start with the assumption the wine's medium, and then you go up to high or down to low, depending on where you're going. If the wine's super light with a little bit of sweetness in it, you may move it down to low. If it's got loads of legs and the wine may be quite full-bodied as well, you might bump it up to high alcohol. Just be careful. It's only three to choose from, low, medium, or high. Now, body, again, there is a little bit of terminology you have to be careful about. The options for body are light, medium minus, medium, medium plus, and full-bodied. And body, I must admit, body is one of those things I struggle with myself. You do have some hacks that you can have in the exam. One way to get a reference for body is to compare water, which you would class as light-bodied, to full-fat milk, which you would normally class as full-bodied. In the exam, you're allowed to have a glass of water beside you. In other words, you've got a reference beside you that you can use in the exam to tell you if the wine is light-bodied or heavier. So if you taste the wine, taste some water, and they weigh about the same, then it's light bodied. If it's just a little bit heavier than that, you might be going to medium minus body. But if the wine feels quite a bit heavier, you're going to full bodied, in which case it's full fat milk. The one in the middle is semi-skim milk, and that tends to be around medium body. So light body is water. You're allowed that in the exam, so do have a glass of water there to help you. It's a little bit heavier, semi-skim milk, that's medium. And if it's full fat milk, weight of full fat milk in your mouth, then you call that full bodied. If it's in between, it's medium plus. And if it's between light bodied and medium, you call it medium minus body. Do use the water in the exam for reference level. Now, a really good thing to do is use body as sort of a sanity check on your tasting notes. What gives wine body? Sugar gives masses of body to a wine. A little bit of sugar gives a huge amount of body to a wine, which is why some of the cheaper wines often have a little bit of residual sugar, just to give a little bit of a bit of guts to the wine and make it more appealing. Alcohol gives a fair bit of body to the wine as well, not as much as sugar, but a fair bit. Flavor intensity, oak, and the grip that you sometimes get with tannins can also just give a little bit of body. Things that take body away, astringency. If you get a wine that's got a real tannic astringency to it, they'll take a little bit of body away. And the other thing that takes a fair bit of body away is acidity. Acidity and sugar tend to sort of cancel each other out and hide them. So sugar gives body to an acidic wine, acidity takes body away from a sweeter wine. If you've got a wine that's low in sugar, you think it's low in alcohol, high in acidity, and you're writing down full body, you're almost certainly wrong. If the wine's high in alcohol, got some residual sugar there, and it's not too acidic, then it's going to be probably full-bodied wine. So you can use the things you've written already to help double-check whether you're sensible with your body. Similarly, you can use body to double-check your alcohol level. So for example, if the wine's bone dry, it's got loads of acidity, and it's full-bodied, then where's that body coming from? It's probably coming from the alcohol, and it means that the wine is possibly high alcohol. It's certainly medium or possibly high alcohol wine there. So just be a bit careful about that. You know, if it's a dry wine with lots of acidity and it's got loads of body, that indicates the alcohol is quite high. So just, you can use body as a sort of a back check to make sure everything's all good. Okay, we're now getting up to things like flavor intensity in the mouth. With flavor intensity, it can be a little bit tricky, and the textbook doesn't give a lot of information on it, so each tutor can sort of choose the way they do it a little bit. So the way I do it is I look at it as two parts. I look at the flavor intensity when you first put the wine into your mouth and the flavor intensity you get at that point, and then I look at it once I've spat the wine out and see how the flavor intensity changes. Now, if the flavor intensity will either hold up pretty well straight away, or it will fade pretty quickly as well. And I use that to sort of calibrate things. So when I've got the wine in my mouth, I'm looking at the initial intensity. And I try and divide it as either light, medium, or pronounced. Is it very strong in your mouth? It's pronounced. If it's very light in your mouth, it's light. And if it's in the middle, it's medium. Pretty straightforward. An example of a pronounced wine would be something like, normally, a pretty good quality New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc will have quite pronounced intensity, or pretty close to it, might be medium plus, whereas something like a Muscadet Sur Lee can often be quite light in terms of intensity. Once I've spat the wine out, the intensity will either stay fairly good straight away, or it will fade almost immediately. And I use that to decide whether I'm going to downgrade it from pronounced to medium plus. So if the wine's really pronounced in your mouth when you've got it and you spit the wine out and it fades very quickly, then I'd bump that down to a medium plus. And similarly, if I'm at medium and after I spit the wine out, it fades to very light, almost instantaneously, there's nothing in your mouth, then I'd bump that down to a medium minus. For me, I really focus in on the light, the medium, and the pronounced, and I try and get that first, and then tweak it down based on what happens after you spat it out. That can sort of get you pretty close to where you want to be. And then you got to do your flavor characters. As a general rule of thumb, the flavors you get on your nose should be the same as the flavors you get on your mouth. You should be able to find all those. And certainly from the examiner's point of view, if he's given you a mark on your nose and then you haven't got that flavor written down on your mouth, then that's a potential mark you would have lost. So it's really important that you start off with thinking about all the flavors on your nose,
I always get my students to write them down. If they're really convinced that it's not there in their mouth, fair enough, they can cross it out. But the starting point is to assume the flavors on your nose are in your mouth. And what you're looking for is slightly richer flavors. You'll find when the wine warms up from being in your mouth, some of the heavier, less volatile aromas will come off, and you'll be able to get more of these savory, richer flavors coming through in your mouth.
So you're looking for slightly different flavors in your mouth as well. For the flavors in your mouth, you only get 3 marks. And that can be up to one observation. The observation being, is it a simple wine or not? So if you're struggling for flavors, you've only got one or two clusters, then you'd use the word simple plus 2 other marks. The other place to look for flavors when it's in your mouth is, what's your initial flavors? What's it like as soon as you spit out? But also, as the flavor fades when you're looking at the finish, you will find different flavors coming up. So do look at those flavors as you've spat the wine out and see if any other additional flavors come up. Look for the flavors when the wine's in the mouth. Look for the flavors when you've spat it out. Look for the flavors as the flavor of the wine fades to finish. You're again looking for more flavors because you will find more stuff there. As I said, 3 marks for that. After you've had all the flavors in your mouth, it's a really good idea to go back to your nose and any additional flavors that you've got in your mouth and see if you can find them on your nose. You know exactly what you're looking for, so it's really good, because when it comes to marking, if the examiner's given you a mark for that flavor that you only got in your mouth, the examiner could have given you a mark for that flavor if it had been on the nose. That's the way the exams work. So always, after you've written down any additional flavors on your mouth, go back and see if you can find them on your nose. Again, marks are allocated based on the style of wine that the examiner's asked to supply. So if it's a simple wine, you'll get 1 mark for your first primary fruit, 1 mark for your simple, and then the final 3rd mark is either at some primary or secondary aroma. Primary only, 1 mark for primary, another 2 marks for any primary flavors. Primary and secondary, 1 mark for the first primary that you write down, 1 mark for your next secondary, and then another mark for any other primary or secondary that you give. And then finally, primary, secondary, and tertiary, 1 mark for primary, 1 mark for secondary, 1 mark for tertiary. Nice and straightforward. The last one is the finish. Now, what I get people to do is they put the wine in the mouth, give it a good old swirl around, spit the wine out, leave your mouth open. You've got to leave your mouth open so the flavor can get up to your nose. I tend to chew and drag my tongue over the roof of my mouth when I'm chewing. Whatever works for you. In your mouth, swirl it around, spit it out, chewing, mouth open, whatever it is, and you count how long the flavor lasts. What you're looking for is the fruit flavor or desirable characteristics. We're not interested if the wine's got any real bitterness to it. You might find that it's got a real unpleasant bitterness or astringency or some flavor that's not really very nice at all. Well, we don't count that, all right? So only count sort of fruity or nice flavors that you get in the wine when you're counting the finish. So count how long the flavors last. And what will happen is the flavor normally comes along, it drops quite hard. A lot of wines, the flavor comes along, it drops really hard, maybe 5, 6, 7 seconds into the tasting. That's fine. But there'll be some lingering flavor. And you keep counting in seconds, 1 potato, 2 potato, 3 potato, 4 sort of thing, as the flavor's lingering and fading. And at some point, you'll go, oh, it's 7 seconds, is it still there? Maybe. 8 seconds, is it there? Probably. 9 seconds, it's definitely gone. But where's it, 7 to 9 seconds? Not quite sure. Just pick the middle one, 8 seconds. So maybe it's probably there at 7, but not sure. 9 seconds, it's definitely gone. Just take 8, all right? Just take the middle one. And that's how long the finish lasts for. Some people will measure this differently. So some people will get the finish for maybe an extra 5 seconds longer than most people. Some people will get it not as long and it'll fade very quickly. It is a little bit dependent on the person. I do recommend that you measure the length of the wine, the flavor, how long the flavor lasts in seconds, but then use that to calibrate against Electra. This is one of those ones where you're likely to deviate. Be super duper careful. Measuring the length is a really nice way of getting an idea of how long the finish lasts for. And then applying it. So the numbers I'm going to give you now need to be calibrated against your lecturer or the person running the exam. For times on the finish, and as I say, everybody will vary a little bit, is to remember the 5, 10, 15 rule. 5 seconds or less, it's short. If it's around 10 seconds, it's medium. And if it's above 15, it's long. So 5, 10, 15. What that means is if you're at 10 plus or minus 1, so if it's sort of 9, 10 or 11 seconds long, then you would call that medium. So that means you can work out the medium plus.
It's so 12, 13, 14 is medium plus. If it's 6, 7, or 8, that's medium minus.
Right. The final section that we need to do is the conclusion. Thankfully, WCT say, they ask you what is the quality level, so you don't need to remember it. And they also ask you its readiness to drink. From a quality point of view, the way I do it is really, really simple and mechanical. I look at things like the balance. Does the wine taste balanced? It could be a high-acid wine like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, but as long as there's nothing really sharp and nasty or angular in your mouth that you're like, oh, what the heck was that? Or it wasn't really particularly astringent, then you normally say you give the wine a mark for balance. If it's got any of the intensity, that's intensity on the nose, intensity on the mouth, that are medium plus or better, I give the wine another mark. The length, if it's medium plus or better, I give it another mark. And if it's got complexity, and that's at least three clusters, usually with a secondary or a tertiary in there, so if the wine's showing some complexity, I'd normally give the wine another mark. So there's up to five marks that you could get. Balance, intensity on the nose, intensity on the mouth is two, length and complexity. So it's out of up to five marks. You start with the assumption the wine is good. It is highly unlikely that you'll be asked to write a tasting note on a faulty wine. So faulty is in the WST SAT, you don't worry about it. It's unlikely to be in the exam. Highly unlikely. Something's gone horribly wrong if you get a faulty wine in the exam. The examiner is supposed to taste the wine before the exam, make sure it's all good, all this sort of stuff. So unless the examiner's really failed in their role as an examiner, you won't get a faulty wine. The next one is poor. And that's a poor wine. It's got no real balance. It's just got some dominant flavor that's a little bit unpleasant, but it's actually not faulty. So sometimes you can get wines that have a real nasty stink to them. They're not particularly pleasant, but they're not faulty. Or they have got lots and lots of sharp acidity to it. Not particularly good. You call it poor quality. Basically, if the wine got zero marks, you'd call it poor quality. If it's got one of the criteria, balance, some sort of intensity or length or complexity or something like that, then you'd call it acceptable. Usually a wine that's got decent balance, but it's not particularly intense or anything like that, then you'd call it acceptable. If the wine's got two criteria, normally it's something like the wine's balanced and it's got some decent intensity or complexity to the wine, then you'd call it good. And I normally say good is your starting criteria. You start with the assumption the wine is good, and then you'll either knock it down to acceptable if it doesn't, you know, if it's only got one criteria and it's not particularly exciting, or if it's got lots of intensity, lots of flavor character, then you might bump it up to very good. Generally, the definition of good is, for me, is two criterias, you know, balanced and a little bit of intensity, either on the nose, mouth, length, or some form of complexity, then you'd call it a good wine. It's the most common point. The wine's balanced, it's integrated, there's no fault. Aroma and structure represents the region and climate. The wine's good. If it's got three marks or three criteria, then you call it very good. Clear expression of the variety and regional character, often showing primary fruits and perhaps some secondary or winemaker or tertiary aromas. Usually you're normally getting into some complexity there. And then the final one is outstanding. Four criterias, represents the style perfectly, balance, fruit, sugar, body, tannins, acidity. You know, you want to think about the integration of the alcohol, there's no real nastiness in the alcohol, etc. Lots of concentration of flavor and intensity. The length is going to be pretty good, with lots of complexity, with lots of flavors, particularly different clusters. Not necessarily tertiaries, because remember, the wine may have not aged yet. It might be a young example of a very good quality wine. The final part of the conclusion is to assess the wine's readiness to drink. There is two parts to this question, and a common mistake is to only write down one. So you might say, the wine is ready to drink. That's great, but you don't get any marks for that. You've got to write down, can drink now, and then discuss its potential for further aging. So the options are, too young, and that's a wine that's unlikely to be in the exam, but it could be. If it's too young, and for a red wine, that might be because it's got super high tannins, super high acidity, bags of intensity of flavor, but it's just too raw. You know, it's like a young Bordeaux. Some people like to drink them, but jeepers creepers. You know, if you've ever done on-premier tasting, those wines are too young. More likely, and this is normally where I say people should start with, is can drink now, but potential for aging. And these are wines that have normally got sort of medium to high levels of acidity. For red wines, a little bit of fruit, and, you know, medium intensity in flavor or aroma or length. You know, this is a wine. It's got the building blocks for aging. What are the building blocks for aging? Preservatives, alcohol, acidity or tannins, and you've got to have decent levels of fruit because the fruit fades over time. So as long as you've got some sort of decent level of intensity and decent level of acidity and tannins, that's great. So drink now, potential for aging. There is a caveat to this I'll talk about in the next one. The next one is drink now, not suitable for further aging. Now, this is a wine that could be maybe too low in acidity or no tannins, maybe lacking some intensity, or also a wine that's been made in a very fruit-driven style. Normally, we call it anaerobic winemaking. So the winemaker has kept the wine away from oxygen. And as a result, the wine is actually normally a real big fruit bomb. Think of Beaujolais Nouveau, all fruit, but no staying power. And New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, some of those can also fit into that category as well. So if the wine's a real fruit-intensive wine, it may not be stable to oxygen, which means as the wine matures and gets introduced to oxygen through the cork, etc., then this wine actually might start to fall apart. So drink now, not suitable for aging, are wines that are lacking the structure of aging, acidity, tannins, or intensity. Or it could be really high in acidity, but it's just a big fruit bomb in a wine that's made anaerobically, in which case you'd normally say drink now, not suitable for further aging. And the final one is too old. And this is a wine that's got low tannins, low acidity, and you've probably in the development called it tired or past its best, and that would be called too old.
Now that we've written our tasting note, you can go back and just check that you've written both a consistent tasting note and you're getting maximum answers. So remember, you want at least five aromas. If you've written less than five aromas on the aroma section, you're going to lose marks. And even if you've written five, they may not line up with the examiner. So at least five, possibly seven or eight aromas, and at least three flavors on the mouth. But to be honest, you're probably looking for at least five on the mouth as well. The color. Now, the color will give you a good indicator of the development of the wine. So if you've got a wine that's showing golden or garnet, brown or amber colors, then that's a really, really, really good sign that the wine's either had secondary or, browner it is, tertiary flavors. Make sure if you've got a brown wine or wine showing brown that you're really, really sure there's no tertiary flavors there, and or really, really sure there's no secondary oak flavors there. The next step is to make sure my body and alcohol, etc., are sensible. Remember, alcohol gives a lot of body to a wine, and if the wine's dry, you've said it's got high alcohol but low body and not too high acidity, then that's probably not a sensible thing to say. Acidity robs the wine of body, so if you've got lots of alcohol and not too much acidity, medium acidity, then the wine's probably going to be pretty close to full-bodied or medium plus body. So just check that whole acidity, alcohol, sweetness, and just make sure there's a consistency there. If you're really struggling for flavors and you're really struggling to get a load of flavors, then the wine's probably simple. Normally simple is 1 to 2 clusters, but if you're super struggling and you're not 100% sure, I'd stick simple down. You're unlikely to lose marks. The examiner don't normally take marks off if you've written something that isn't correct. They only do that if you're being a bit silly and you've just written every smell you could possibly think of. So usually, it won't hurt you to put down simple, particularly if you're struggling for flavors. And also remember that what you got on the nose is probably what you're going to get on the mouth. So make sure that everything you've written on the nose is in your mouth, and, you know, scrabble something out if you're absolutely 100% sure that it's not there, but it's probably safer to leave it there. And then anything you've got on the mouth, particularly those richer, more riper flavors, make sure you hunt them out in the nose, because you're more likely to get those more tertiary, savory characters, dried fruits, that sort of thing, on the mouth than you are in the nose. So do go hunting for them on the nose, and make sure that anything you got in the mouth, you've at least checked and you're absolutely sure that they're not on the nose. Also, as I said at the beginning, double check that color. If you're getting a brown wine and you've got no tertiaries in there, there's a pretty good chance you've made a mistake somewhere. So super, super, super careful about that. And that is the WST Level 3 Systematic Approach to Tasting. And what we've covered is our 3050's guide to the WST Level 3 Systematic Approach to Tasting. Hopefully you've been tasting along with us and you've now got a tasting note that represents your first crack at writing out the systematic approach to tasting. Brilliant. Go away, practice it. If you've got the guide, I really strongly recommend, especially those first two pages, that you keep that guide right beside you at all times for the first while tasting. If you're going to use our mnemonic, which is later on in the guide we haven't really discussed today, definitely use that for every example of tasting that you're going to do. If you've got the full guide, you'll see where people lose marks. You've seen all those reasons people use marks and why. Okay, that finishes the introduction. I hope you've found it useful. If you're sitting the exam soon, hopefully it's given you an insight into how you could approach some of these. Remember, each tutor will teach slightly differently, and the key thing is to make sure you're aligned with your tutor. The way I do it is a nice structured way, and we get very high pass rates. I've only had a couple of people not pass. So good luck for the exam, and do enjoy the rest of the podcast. We've got a number of really fascinating interviews for you guys to help. And also, don't forget, if you're doing the course, we have a large selection of written questions and also multi-choice questions for the exam. So do consider getting our quiz questions. They're excellent and they will really help you, particularly the written part of the examination where you need to pass both the multi-choice section and the written part of the section. And a lot of people pass the multi-choice, but they fail the written part. So do practice both, and that'll give you a feel for what's going on and a way to approach them. Good luck.